For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, to which you should subscribe, as you should also send us money, in case you don't already. And with a thank you to everyone who got us to the milestone of 120,000 YouTube subscribers. Onwards and upwards. Also, a thank you to all the viewers on the Isle of Man, which is number 37 on our list of all-time views by jurisdiction. And yes, it is self-governing, and it claims the oldest continuous parliament anywhere, the Tynwald, which means Field of the Thing. Moreover, our King Charles III is also Lord of Man, which is a very cool title. Much better than Michael of Man. But I digress. Or not, because speaking of islands, our top story in this newsletter was the hunt for climate rubbish that found a New York Times story about how climate change is helping make submarines invisible. Which is mighty strange, since it says climate change will do something good. No, that's not the weird bit. Because it believes there's nothing climate change cannot do. No, that's not the weird bit. It's because it's full of the usual nonsense, from worthless predictions to inaccurate data to unquestioning faith in climate models. Quote, the waters where many submarines lurk have been quickly warming as humans pump out greenhouse gases and oceans absorb the excess heat that gets trapped in the atmosphere. And that warming, according to a recent paper produced by the NATO Defense College in Rome, can have a powerful effect on how sound, the primary means of detecting submarines, behaves underwater. It could make large areas of the ocean impenetrable to submarine hunters, end quote. Bosh. And don't take our word for it. Ask them. Right after admitting that this could arises from comparing a computer model of how sound waves moved through the depths from 1970 to 1999 with, quote, the way current climate modeling predicts they will move between 2070 and 2099, end quote. So, comparing one thing they haven't seen with another thing they couldn't have seen, it goes, quote, the researchers found that in the North Atlantic, where Russian submarines play cat and mouse with NATO forces, the distances at which they can be heard will shrink significantly. This could be by almost half in the Bay of Biscay off the coasts of France and Spain. There were similar dynamics at play in the Western Pacific, where Chinese and American submarines operate, and where detection ranges could shrink by up to 20%, end quote. Right. But shrinking detection ranges by up to 20%, when they're currently well over 100 kilometers, does not make large areas of the ocean impenetrable to submarine hunters. And nor is the ocean currently transparent to them. Tom Clancy fans will remember that a crucial aspect of submarine warfare is the way that a sudden sharp temperature change at the thermocline distorts sonar signals badly, and always has. Still, let's not get ahead of ourselves with models of what the ocean will do in 2080 to technology that's 5 decades away that we can't begin to imagine. Because, Tony Heller notes, these famous quickly warming ocean waters are cooling. There was an odd spike in late 2023 and 2024 that the models couldn't predict beforehand or explain afterward, though everyone insisted that it must be climate change causing the heat, rather than the heat being climate change, because it must be. And now the temperatures are going back down, which the models also can't explain. But they can fail to find a Chinese sub in 2099. Now, speaking of data, or lack of it, with media outlets all independently hitting on May 2025 being the second hottest on record, Steve Malloy at Junk Science, including a rude word that we omit, asked, quote, if May was second hottest on record, why was May 2025 cooler than May 1896 in the US? Is the US regionally exempt from global warming, end quote? And as he went on to say, quote, the U.S. has by far and away the most comprehensive temperature coverage on the planet, yet May was not close to anything hottest, end quote, suggesting that a lot of fiddling and fudging is going on instead of good old-time journalistic, if your mother says she loves you, check it out, that asks, where do these numbers come from and who's pushing what agenda? Meanwhile, how's that green transition working for you? Oh, not so good? For instance, from way down south, we hear that, quote, the initial cost of producing green hydrogen from Australia's two largest projects will be more than 4 times the price of rival energy sources, posing a fresh setback for Labour's bid to deliver a major new export industry by 2030 and meet net zero goals, end quote. And you told us you had it all figured out. And another thing. An alert reader informs us that when he posted a criticism of climate orthodoxy, the ever-sanctimonious Catherine Hayhoe lashed out that, quote, "This comment below that I reported today contained 7 well-documented disinformation talking points, from CO2 is plant food to climate change has nothing to do with wildfires," end quote. And then, as if it were a boast, not proof of petulance and lack of Christian charity, despite clobbering people with her faith at every opportunity, quote, "Over the last decade, I've reported hundreds of comments and posts. I am not aware of a single one that was found to go against LinkedIn's policies," end quote. Though ironically, she once got flagged for it and seems to have gotten the person responsible fired. We did not expect the climate inquisition. Okay, we did. Also, from the Theory That Explains Everything Explains Nothing file, Chris Martz puts a Guardian story from July 4, 2022 saying, quote, "Spain and Portugal suffering driest climate for 1,200 years, research shows," end quote, right next to one from November 2, 2024 saying, quote, "Spain's apocalyptic floods show 2 undeniable truths. The climate crisis is getting worse and big oil is killing us," end quote. Or maybe stupidity is. Also, 2 weeks ago we cited Roger Pilkey Jr. that hurricane season was off to a quiet start. How quiet? There had been no tropical cyclones in the Northern Hemisphere at all by May 30th, and he added, if there weren't any by June 5th, it would be the quietest start since 1970. And at the risk of seeming cynical, we accused alarmists of a double standard with regard to windy seasons or even just predictions of windy seasons being proof of climate change, whereas calm seasons were unworthy of mention. So guess what? No tropical cyclones by June 5th brought this June 11th headline in the Washington Post, quote, "Hurricane season is off to a fast start, at least in the Pacific Ocean," end quote. Have they no shame? In the newsletter, we also bring the disturbing, if unsurprising, news that corporations will apparently be first against the wall when the revolution comes. Or at least so we gather from a piece in Bloomberg that asks, quote, "As companies abandon climate pledges, is there a silver lining?" end quote, and answers, yes, comrades. Quote, Coca-Cola, BP, HSBC, and countless others are dropping environmental goals, highlighting the inadequacy of voluntary action, end quote. Others might, of course, say that companies blithely made pledges of drastic action later, back when talk was cheap, and it seemed that this green energy transition the kids were going on about was a cool, easy, marvelous thing. But, with objects and calendar closer than they appear, it was suddenly necessary to deliver concretely, and they couldn't because, all together now, there is no such transition because it defies the laws of physics and economics. And at that point, who doesn't want Leviathan blundering in? Certainly no watermelons. In the newsletter, we also admit to puzzlement at MSN's news aggregator. It's clearly not overseen by the gimlet-eyed editors of yore contemptuous of nonsense. And yet it does sometimes, by accident or design, pass on useful contrarian views. For instance, 14 ancient climates that challenge today's predictions. Indeed. Because for all the abuse we get about how people who know about the past can't possibly form opinions on Earth's climate, you really do have to know something about history to understand climate or anything else. Or indeed, to be an effective alarmist. Because if your theory can't deal with counterexamples that will turn up if we look at the past, it's worthless. The article starts, "Did you know that Earth was once as hot as a pizza oven, or that entire continents shivered under mile-thick ice sheets," end quote? And yes, being a CDN viewer, you certainly knew the latter. You might struggle to state the exact temperature within a pizza oven, but you knew about woolly mammoths, and you knew why they grew fur. Then they get to the snowball Earth that geologists strongly suspect existed about 700 million years ago, fortunately before the Cambrian explosion of multicelled life, which it would certainly have snuffed out had it come later, when, quote, "ice reached the equator and global temperatures plunged so low that the oceans themselves nearly froze solid," end quote. Wow, talk about climate change and apocalypse. And now, tell us how CO2 caused that one. On it goes, through, indeed, the Cambrian explosion during, quote, a sweltering hothouse. The Cambrian period saw temperatures soar far higher than anything we experience today, with ocean temperatures reaching up to 40 Celsius, 104 Fahrenheit. This was the age when complex life suddenly burst onto the scene. Instead of wilting in the heat, ancient creatures like trilobites and the first fish flourished. The wild warmth of this era suggests that life can adapt to extremes much more dramatic than modern predictions usually account for, raising questions about what's possible in the future, end quote. Indeed, though adapt isn't quite right, arise would be the precise term. Not that we want the oceans back at 40 degrees Celsius, you understand. But when we hear that a half degree rise will kill coral, don't believe a word of it. The piece then goes on with glaciations, including one where atmospheric CO2 seems to have risen sharply just as temperature fell off the table in the Ordovician. It's kind of important to the story. And try as they might, and they do try, they just can't pin the changes on the dreaded carbon pollution. At one point they admit that, quote, the Jurassic super greenhouse shows a world where high carbon dioxide didn't spell disaster for all life, but instead fueled incredible biodiversity, end quote. Following which, long afterward, quote, around 34 million years ago, the Oligocene cooling is a puzzle because it happened even as carbon dioxide levels were still relatively high, end quote. Which is only a puzzle if you insist that CO2 drives temperature, regardless of the evidence. But at least they talk about the evidence. And we're grateful for that, and for them underlining that when it comes to climate, you need history to avoid being an ignoramus. In the newsletter, we then continue our Look It Up series by sharing a Heritage Foundation climate change calculator that uses an IPCC model called MAGIC, that's Model for Assessment of Greenhouse Gas-Induced Climate Change, to let you determine how much warming will supposedly happen by 2050 and by 2100 with various emission scenarios, including drastic cuts. Suppose, for instance, you plug in an instant U.S. reduction of 40%. Well, by 2100, global warming will have been reduced by 0.06 degrees Celsius. So, how much economic devastation would you exchange for that accomplishment? Oh, and speaking of history, a new reconstruction by a large team of mainly European scientists, hat tip to no trick zone here, of climate conditions in the European Alps spans nearly 9,000 years, ending in 2014, and reveals not the Lord of the Tree Rings hockey stick, but rather something more like a ringette stick. Basically, conditions were warmer and wetter 9,000 years ago during the early Holocene, and then they gradually got cooler and drier over time, bottoming out in the Little Ice Age. What, that thing again? Yep. Moreover, current conditions are nothing unusual compared to what was observed throughout, except for being rather cooler and drier than most of the Holocene. So, hottest year ever? Phooey. And finally, at the risk of belaboring the obvious, the CO2science.org archive confirms that eastern purple coneflower, aka Echinacea purpurea, a perennial and source of those herbal remedies, loves CO2. So, if you think Echinacea makes you feel better when sick, help it feel better all the time with more carbon pollution. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I recommend Clancy's book, Red Storm Rising.